Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Time for our Monday morning house call from Northwestern Medicine. And with us today, Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Central DuPage Hospital, Dr. Thomas Moran. Doctor, good morning. Let's talk first about walking pneumonia. The CDC and the Illinois Department of Public Health issuing an alert warning and this is directed to daycare, schools, and parents. The rise in cases mainly affects children. Is that right, Doctor?
Yeah, good morning, Bob. Walking pneumonia is a bacterial pneumonia that usually causes, majority of the time, just mild upper respiratory symptoms. But there has been an increase in the causes that it gets deeper into the lungs and causing pneumonia. The hardest hit areas right now of the ages is really that younger population, like you said, in daycare centers, in school. Majority of the cases, the reason they call it walking pneumonia is people are able to handle it without actually presenting to the hospital or to a doc and clear the infection. But now we're finding a little bit more increase in them developing pneumonia. It's an easily treated disease with antibiotics, but those that are at increased risk, those with some immune compromise or other diseases, have a little harder course of clearing the infection.
Symptoms similar to the flu or not?
Very similar. I mean, almost all the respiratory, you have a cough, sore throat, you can have a little bit of runny nose, you develop a fever, sometimes you get a little shorter breath with it. It's typical of other respiratory-like illnesses.
In health news lately, we've been hearing a lot about E. coli, so I think we need to talk about this a little bit, ways to prevent it. What do we need to know about it?
Yeah, E. coli is a common bacteria. It's in our gut. So you think about food preparation and where we end up getting the bacteria. It's pretty common on all our foods and prepping the foods. It's really thinking of wash your hands before you actually prepare the food. Wash your fruits and vegetables. Don't swallow pool water if you're in a pool. You think of what people do in pools. If you're preparing, meats and fish with vegetables, have separate cutting boards, separate knives for that, and wash in between. Best way to think about this is bacteria everywhere. Bacteria usually replicate about every 20 minutes. Some of the organisms, you only need maybe 100 organisms or 10,000 organisms. But when you think about them replicating every 20 minutes and doubling, that's a quick way of, if you leave food out, you don't wash your hands to wash the bacteria off, you have more chance of ingesting the bacteria and coming down with a diarrheal illness.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people think that, well, if I'm going to heat something up, I'm safe. But that's not necessarily true, is it?
Not necessarily true. The biggest thing you have to think about is don't leave foods out for more than 2 hours in a more cool environment. If it's hot out, an hour, and it needs to be refrigerated. And it's just basic kind of food safety skills. It's washing. Don't transfer from one raw food to another food. And don't leave your food sitting on the counter for too long.
Yeah. Of course, if you go to a restaurant, you don't have control. So when you have this, do most people have the same symptoms? And is it serious in almost all cases?
Not all of them are serious. I mean, there are some that are more susceptible to the illness that can make them present to the hospital. The very young, the very old, those that are immune compromised can get dehydrated and then need to be hydrated and supported. The majority of the people that get it, it's a self-limited illness overall. There are some of the strains of E. coli bacteria that can cause more invasive type of diarrheas that at times need to be treated with antibiotics.
Doctor, this is interesting what researchers have discovered about these weight loss drugs easing knee pain. What can you tell us about this?
Yeah, it's very interesting. But if you really think about it, our knees carry a lot of our weight of our body. Each pound of excess weight leads to 4 pound of increased load bearing that the knees have to kind of sustain. So if you have 10 pounds of weight gain, you got 40 pounds of additional load bearing for your knees. And like anything else, additional stress creates additional wear and tear, which can lead to chronic conditions like osteoarthritis. So the weight loss drugs are decreasing overall weight for individuals. That weight leads to a reduction of stress. That stress leads into you can walk easier, less use of pain medicine. And at some instances, what they're finding is it might be if they do this and it decreases the progression of the osteoarthritis, less likelihood of needing a knee replacement.
So in this new study, does this mean that this could really be an alternative to knee replacements?
Well, our knee replacements are coming from our overall, you know, lack of functionality that we have because of the weight gain. Obesity creates a lot of increased stress in our body, not only our bones and joints, but our cardiovascular system, our ability to exercise. And it looks like the weight reduction drugs, the GLP-1 drugs, are leading to a reversal of that progress that's going towards you're going to need chronic care medicine for bones and joint, diabetes, hypertension, you just name it as you go through. And it's a good promise to kind of reverse something that, you know, without good diet and exercise to keep your weight down, now we have a treatment to kind of get that weight off so you don't have these chronic conditions.
And it's not just Ozempic, correct?
No, it's other GLP-1 drugs also.
There was a new study that, two findings. One surprised me, one did not. What didn't surprise me is smokers are less likely to die if they quit following a cancer diagnosis. The other thing that did kind of shock me is that smokers diagnosed with cancer often, you know, keep lighting up. What's your experience with this?
Yeah, there's a lot of times people get diagnosed with cancer and they figure, I have cancer, why would I stop smoking? How is it going to affect me? And the study has shown that even after a cancer diagnosis, quitting smoking increases your overall survival by 26%. Hmm. You know, we used to talk about smoking as stop smoking to prevent disease. And now it is, even after you get the disease, stopping smoking extends your health span overall and your lifespan.
Before we let you go, I wanted to ask you about a story from the other day. An Iowa resident passed away after contracting a suspected case of Lassa fever. I've never heard of this. What is Lassa fever?
So Lassa fever is a viral illness that causes kind of a hemorrhagic fever where you can have bleeding from different areas of your body. It's really situated where in the region of West Africa. It is spread from infected rats of the West Africa area, and you come in contact with their body fluids. So you think of feces, urine, blood. There was a resident of Iowa that traveled to this area, came in contact with this virus, and on returning, started to develop symptoms and ended up in the hospital. Usually, the mortality overall for mild cases, because 80% of the cases are usually mild, and people recover without a problem. But those that get hospitalized, the mortality rate is anywhere from 15 to 30%. It is not something that people should really start getting worried about. In the last 55 years, there's only been about 8 travel-associated cases overall, even though there's a lot of cases in West Africa because that's where it's endemic.
Let's end on some positive news about exercise and how great just one 30-minute session is. This is some new research that kind of solidifies what you've probably been telling patients for a long time, haven't you, Doctor?
Yeah, it's very interesting. You think across the globe, there's about 530 Americans that have diabetes. 98% of those are type 2 diabetes or diabetes that develops later in life. And what we're finding in the study is just managing your diet, a little bit of exercise, decreases your overall blood glucose levels, improves your insulin sensitivity or how your body uses insulin, and helps reduce development of type 2 diabetes. Simplest way to think about this 30-minute workout, it is go for a 30-minute walk. You know, after eating dinner, if you could get up and move around and have a brisk walk, you will do yourself a whole lot of good by decreasing your overall blood glucose level, you'll improve your insulin sensitivity, and you can improve your overall metabolism, and you'll feel a ton better without feeling a lot of bloated after eating a big meal at night.
For this study that we're talking about, mainly young people, and these were healthy people with no sign of diabetes.
Right. They did take a population that hasn't developed diabetes. They monitored their baseline insulin levels and glucose levels, and what they found is even in those individuals, their regulation was much better. So applying it to those with diabetes that are already coming down with the illness, it is a benefit for them also.
And when you say 30 minutes, you have to get your heart rate up, though, don't you?
You want to do a pretty good brisk walk. You want to get moving. It's not a leisurely stroll. Just kind of get moving a little bit. 30 minutes is not a lot of time overall. You know, walk up a flight of stairs when you're at work. You know, park your car further away from the entrance to the store or the grocery store. Anything that you can do that is going to increase your overall activity level in a more aerobic capacity is going to be beneficial to you.
Yeah, I always tell my wife, walk like you're late. And in her case, it's true most of the time. Northwestern Medicine's Dr. Thomas Moran. Thank you, sir. Have a good day.
Thank you. Take care.